Hi, I'm Andrea McLean.
And I'm Nick Feeney.
And between us, we've had 5 weddings.
4 children.
3 divorces.
And 2 dogs.
Richer, poorer, in sickness and in health, in work and play, in menopause meltdowns.
And teenage tantrums.
It is love, laughter, friendship and...
glasses of wine.
That get us through. And we hope that you will continue to enjoy our podcast as we attempt to...
master midlife.
Now, you know I like a theme. You know I love a theme. Today's theme is fill your cup. What we can do to fill our cup, because obviously this is something that we do on a regular basis. We post about it on social media. Mm-hmm. And I thought, who can we have on as a guest that is an expert on filling cups?
Who would that be?
Who would that be? It's none other than Helen McGinn.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Hi. Lovely to see you both.
Technically, you fill glasses.
I do glasses, yeah, but cups. Sometimes it's a cup.
I was going to say, let's be honest, we've had some of the stories like when the children were young,
yes,
cups were used.
Cups were used. Hello Kitty cups.
Mine was a, what was it called? Kath Kidson.
Yes.
It was a Kath Kidson mug.
Yeah. We've all been there.
We've all been there. Thank you so much.
Some are still there.
Yeah.
Hold on, it gets better.
Yeah, it really does.
It does. So I thought we would talk about... obviously, every week we do our thing that we call hashtag 4 things, which really is just the 4 things that we try and do each week that fill our cup. Now, why 4? Really, because it makes us do something other than just work all the time. That was where it started with us, wasn't it?
It is. You know, it's the whole premise is, what 4 things do you do or have you done this week to fill your cup that had nothing to do with work? Mm-hmm. And I think if we're not careful, we get so caught up in life, in work, mm-hmm. in stuff that we have to do, certainly as we get through midlife, we forget to do those things that bring us just the simplest bit of joy. But also, if we don't reflect on those things, we sometimes think, God, I'm not doing anything for myself.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. It's that power of reflection. And the 4 things, there's 7 days in a week, right? If in 4 days, you could, out of those 7, you could be doing something just to fill your cup, then I think it just, on reflection, shows that you've had a really healthy week, good bit of balance between work, life and play, you know, and that's why we did it.
And I think also we tend to, we have such an all or nothing attitude. We do it with, you know, with exercise or diet or what have you. It's like, if I can't spend an hour at the gym, then there's no point doing anything. If I can't go on this full diet where it's all, then there's no point doing anything. Yeah. And it's the same with doing something that brings you joy. We kind of think about it needs to be something massive, like go to a spa or do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for me, why are you laughing?
Because I'm laughing at what was filling our cup last week.
I wrote it down.
Right. It was okay. It's so lame.
It's so,
we loved
so
it.
So much joy.
What?
So much joy. We sold some furniture on Facebook.
Oh no, that brings so much joy.
Oh my God.
I totally relate to that.
Facebook Marketplace, once you sift through the scammers, mm-hmm. right, and you actually get to some genuine people, and you go, oh my God, they've offered me this. It's only a little less than I wanted. Oh my God. And they're coming round tomorrow.
I know.
It's
the little wins.
It is.
Yeah.
And then one of the things that we sold, which has been with us for a long time, but sadly it had to go, it was a jukebox. It's a stunning bit of kit, but where we are now, it just sits like it's trying to hide in a room that it's not wanted.
It's not the
kind of
thing that you can hide in a room.
It's massive.
No, it just sits there telling you it's still there.
I mean, it's quite a modern one, as in it was only, it must have been 20 years old or something, as opposed to... Well,
the retro styling of it was 20, but it had the iPod fitting.
Yeah. It had an iPod fitting.
Oh, wow.
The original iPod.
Yeah. Sounds like some jukebox.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but it had all the bubbles and the colour lights and everything. And it had a video screen as well, which would play the music video. And I mean...
I'm quite quite sad you got rid of it.
As a party piece, it was amazing.
Yeah.
But one of the things was, A, we were grateful because we've been trying to shift it for a while and someone actually bought it off Facebook Marketplace.
And actually, how much joy did we get when we were voice messaging back and forth? We were helping her set it up and all that sort of stuff. And she sent us like a little video of it going with the bubbles
so
on
happy.
And you could hear her kids dancing in the background. And we were like, it's got a whole new lease of life.
Yeah.
You know, it's bringing joy to someone else's house. It's great.
But it's what we spent the money on that filled our
cup. Come on.
Oh,
do share.
Oh, this is how exciting our life is. We got new bar stools.
Again, I'm with you. And did you find the perfect bar stools?
Oh, no, that makes it sound like we have a bar. It's not. It's
comfy.
The kitchen bar stools.
Yeah.
Comfy. Bar stools as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like,
really
we've
nice.
Been sitting on these ones, which we really did like the look of, and they've been great, but we're sitting on it. And after about 30 minutes of sitting on these bar stools, your back starts going, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Please get off. It's
so
uncomfortable.
I think the key word here is comfort in everything. So you need, absolutely. You need
oh my gosh. So this is how sad our life is, was that our joy was, I see it as, it's like, fun recycling because you're passing something on that someone else is getting some joy out of.
Yeah.
Then you're getting, we bought things on Facebook Marketplace as well. And this is not an advert for them, it's just who we have.
But
to
if you do
using.
Want to sponsor us, give us
so
a shout.
So happy with that. So happy with that. Because, it's all about the little tiny things. We had a trip to IKEA.
But I think that is a whole premise of filling your cup and going back to what Andrea said. It's not about.
Not the big things. Yeah.
We have to remind ourselves that there are so many little things that we can do daily.
Yes.
Right. That can actually remind you how good life is.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
plenty out there reminding you how tough life is.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes, you know, each week we have to look a little deeper.
Dig a little deeper.
Yeah. But even like our trip to IKEA, I mean, there we were.
We were
Sunday
there early
morning.
Before it opened.
Were you? Always good.
We had a debate. I need to eat first before I go to IKEA. Because you could get lost. You could be there for hours.
Yeah,
you need
absolutely.
Supplies, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
you're so
what
nice.
Sort of things do you do to fill your cup?
So I was going to say, you know, whilst you were talking about your IKEA trip, I was thinking, do you know, I think I'm actually quite good at filling my cup on a regular basis.
Good.
Which is
and
brilliant.
Not just, so I do think it's little things like, so this week, for example, we got 3 weeks ago, we got a new puppy because we lost our really old black lab back in February. And I honestly didn't think we would have another one because we loved him so much and I couldn't imagine having another one. But we did get a little black lab and he is now about 3.5 months old. And one of the things that I just love doing, because I'm lucky enough that most of the time I can work from home, is I will just sit on the kitchen floor and play with him for like 10, 15 minutes. It just makes you stop. It's such a joyful thing to do. He's the sweetest thing and everything to him at the moment is so exciting. And so when you sit there and you do that for a bit, I mean, that is a lovely thing to do. It's therapy in itself.
Do you know what? It's like you are speaking to two people that absolutely totally get it. We are massive dog lovers.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have our dog Teddy, Cavapoo. Yeah. We also sadly lost Jackson and Andrea's dog when I first got together with Andrea. The maddest, gayest dog ever. He was just so happy, wasn't he?
Oh,
he was like...
He didn't just say hello. He said,
hi!
everyone and
he
everything
loved
was
every
awesome. And
I
he
loved
was a
it.
Joy.
It
he was such a joy.
But even like with Teddy, it's like today, he just sits on a chair and just looks. And I think the thing when you have a dog, it makes you stop.
It does. Yeah.
You know, it's probably like when your children are younger and they have good phases, because there's certain phases you can't wait till they're older, but there's other phases when they're younger.
Yeah.
That you just look at them and it fills you with so much love.
Yeah.
And I think that's certainly what a dog
that wasn't my tummy, by
brings
the way,
in.
That very strange noise.
But I think as well, we very often at the weekends, one of my favourite things to do is to go for a walk with the dogs. So we've got two others, we've got three all together.
Wow.
And we will sometimes drag like one of the children with us. We've got three teenagers. But if they don't want to come, Ross and I will happily go by ourselves with the dogs for a walk for an hour. And we live in the New Forest, so... That's a really lovely
beautiful.
Thing to do.
And do you have like a nice pub or cafe or something en route?
Well, funny enough, most Sundays, because where we live, we are back Ross and I met when we were young because we were in the same village.
Hang on. Young.
Yes.
We know the age. Come on. There's young and this.
Four. We were 4 years old and we were at the village school. And my first words to Ross were, his first words to me, sorry, were stop following me.
Tell me you said no.
I said no. I just carried on, ran around the playground, just kept following. Hi, still here. And we've been together for years.
Wow.
So we now live where we live. We're near my parents, his parents. So most Sundays we will have a Sunday lunch. Mostly now at ours because our parents are all getting older. So we will just have them at ours. Also, when you've got three teenagers, it's easier if you just do it from home because you know they'll stick around if they know there's going to be free food. So most Sundays we'll walk the dogs, then come back and have Sunday lunch. And it'll be a variation of different, whether it's his parents, mine, my sister-in-law, whoever it is around the
table. That just sounds like our perfect Sunday,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah,
I love it. We've always done it. And Ross's parents always did the same. Mine didn't because my parents got divorced when I was quite young. So I didn't really have that Sunday lunch thing in the same way. His did. And I remember growing up, you know, as much around his table, funny enough, because we've been together for so long. So we've always tried to do that with ours. Because I think it's even if you only get them sitting round the table for half an hour with all the children and us and grandparents, there is that conversation that is just so precious and funny.
100%, 100%. Yeah. And also, you know, like we said, it doesn't have to be anything big or it doesn't have to be elongated.
Yeah.
20, 30 minutes of just everyone being present, having that moment and sharing that memory is enough to fill your cup, isn't it? But also checking on the kids, make sure they're happy.
Yeah.
And then by then you can go now, it's the adults going to talk now.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Yeah, we do that. When they say, can we get done? Yep, bye, off you go. You've eaten, it's good.
I'm really interested in sort of unpacking that a little bit, in this idea of you coming at your view of family life from a slightly different perspective to his, because obviously you're a child of divorced parents and he's not. Just by osmosis, you will subliminally have a different idea as to what you see happiness looking like.
Yeah.
You know, even if you are in a happily divorced home, and of course that can be a thing. Would you say then that you've consciously tried to create what you have now, or is it just kind of fallen into place?
I would say it's probably a bit of both. I mean, I was very lucky in that my parents, even when they got divorced and I was about eight, stayed in the same village. Well, and actually we just moved to the next door village for a while, but we all stayed in the same area and still are to this day. And so, you know, my mum lives down the road still. My dad married again, has been for 35 years longer, I think. And so it was all for the best anyway. But I think that's probably something you learn when you're a bit older. You can then look back and realise that it was a good thing. And yeah, I think you're right. There's a bit of both. I think I always knew I wanted that for my family, you know, the bit that I'd seen growing up where there is the table with everyone around it. But I don't feel like I've had to work that hard to get it, if you see what I mean. Of course you have to work because it doesn't just happen. Mm. But the dynamic was already there. It was already in his DNA and sort of in my DNA. So
it felt very natural. Yeah. And I saw also with these Sunday dinners, and based on what you do for a living, there's got to be plenty of free-flowing wine, isn't there?
There is. I mean, it's quite ridiculous. But because I get sent quite a lot of wine as part of my job to taste, if I am doing a wine tasting at home, I will then often...
Is that like every Friday night?
Every Friday night.
Well, bring a friend.
Generally speaking, right, if I'm doing tastings up in... A lot of them happen in London. So I'll be tasting maybe 100, 150 wines a day. If I'm at home, I'll often do tastings with about 30 because I'll be doing a tasting to write a piece for something. But obviously I have a taste and then I've got these bottles, put the corks back in the top. And I have very happy neighbours. So they go on the doorstep like milk bottles, really, and an email goes around saying there's, you know, there's bottles on the doorstep. Come and help yourself.
So like people put boxes of apples from their garden.
Yes,
you do that with
yes,
wine.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My God.
That's amazing.
Hang on. Can we just go back to when I'm in London, I have to taste 100 in a day. How the fuck do you then do anything else?
Well, yeah, I think again, it's
and
all
is that
in the,
why you only do
30?
Because you have to do the writing afterwards.
It's all in the training. So I spent 10 years as a supermarket wine buyer. So when that, my job really was just assessing wine all day long. So you're tasting. Spitting it out, obviously. Yeah. But you do build a tolerance to it.
Oh my
slightly.
God.
But funny enough, I've found as I've gotten older, my tolerance, actually, if I'm sitting and enjoying a glass of wine, just, you know, drinking it rather than tasting it and spitting it out, my capacity is like it's ridiculous. Mm. I'm such a lightweight nowadays. You know, I can't physically, just can't drink like I used to. And so now it's got to the stage where I think, okay, if I am going to have a glass of wine, I want it to be a really nice one, actually.
Yeah. Do you think that, because that's definitely the case.
With me. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
For both of us.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know what the science is or why, but there is clearly something that happens in midlife, isn't there? Oh,
definitely.
Because certainly in our 20s and 30s, yeah, we're bulletproof, aren't we? We can pretty much take anything, or we certainly think we can.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, one day you realise that you've had one or two and then that's it. It sends you over the edge. And you're like, what? Yeah. You know, that used to be my prees, as the children say.
I mean, physically, our bodies just cannot process alcohol in the way it used to. That's what happens.
But what's interesting is that obviously for us, this is a social and recreational thing that's happened. So we really don't drink. We have bottles of wine that have been sitting there for absolutely yonks that are in the
fridge.
We
have a really cool wine drawer in our fridge that we filled up with wine that we'll probably never get drunk, but it looks great. It looks great.
But every now
people come round, I'm like that. See my wine drawer.
I think I need to come round and see this wine drawer.
You are so welcome.
Yes.
You are so
that's
welcome.
That's what we'll do. I'll change it up. Don't you worry.
But what's so interesting is that, you know, every now and again I'll get a little taste for it and I'll think, no, I do. I fancy having some wine. And I have to be so selective now about what I do have, because one glass of the wrong wine and I have a banging head. I don't sleep very well that night. The next day, I feel like I've been run over. And yet, if I choose the right wine, and this is why I thought it'd be so interesting to talk to you in terms of wine, seems to be the drink of choice when it comes to midlife, particularly for women.
Yeah.
Choose the right one. We can share a bottle between us and I barely feel anything.
Yeah.
So what do you look for? If you are a midlife person and you're enjoying your wine, but it's not affecting you in the way that it used to in a bad way.
Yeah.
What do you look for? Is it preservatives? Is there something on the label?
Wine is a pretty natural ingredient. You know, it's made from squashed grapes. So there's not an awful lot in there that is going to, make you feel bad other than alcohol. I mean, that's the main thing. And very often you hear nowadays, there's a lot of talk about sulfites in wine and whether those can affect you or give you a bad headache. And I think very often the conversation is about sulfites without remembering that actually the number one factor is alcohol. So there are some people who definitely do unfortunately react to sulfites more than others. And some people are allergic and you get, you know, quite a reaction to the headache thing that you talk about. Lots of people do seem to say that it gets to a certain age and stage and then that happens and they just can't enjoy wine in the same way. But I think generally my advice would be, I mean, drink less but better. And if you are going to enjoy a glass of wine, make sure it's something you really enjoy. Don't just, you know, don't settle for second best because it's kind of not worth it. Mm. And I kind of avoid the more alcoholic wines. I'd rather have something that was more like 12-13% than the old 14.5-15% wines, because that makes a big difference.
Am I going to sound like a right numpty? I've never looked at the alcohol content.
Yeah,
ever.
No. Well, it's usually in tiny writing at the back, so it's, you know, it's sometimes you can't see it straight away.
Right.
But I tend to like wines that are a bit more subtle nowadays anyway, rather than the big blockbusters okay. that I used to love. Yeah.
That's so interesting. I mean, I know, you know, I'll look at, I like a Pickpull. I like a Pickpull.
That's good. That's usually about 12.5.
Oh, 13%. So that's why that sits better with me.
I think so.
Rather than, I don't really know anything else. I'm serving on Blanc or a Sancerre.
But we've been out to restaurants before where we've had a Pickpull and you've been like run over the next day.
Yeah.
And then there's a particular one that we get from Tesco's. That just
the finest.
Works.
Yeah, it's lovely.
It's so nice.
It just works.
Yeah.
And I have no ill effects at all. And we just enjoy the taste of it.
Yeah. Mm. And you've got to eat. You've got to eat with wine as well. I think that makes a big difference. Mm. Sometimes when people say to me they've had wine and then they felt, you know, it's made them feel really awful the next day. I'm like, well, did you eat when you had? No, I was just grazing on snacks. Well, that'll be it. Make sure you eat, because that's all part of, that will help your body really just break it down and cope with the alcohol. If you're drinking on an empty stomach, you're going to feel...
Well, the reality is, as you just said, you know, it's the alcohol that's bad. And let's be honest, it's poison.
It is.
Alcohol is poison, right? Yeah. Packaged up in wine can make it palatable poison, right?
Really, you know, really a bit more enjoyable.
Yeah. But ultimately, you are poisoning your body. Yeah. So, you know, like you said... You know, the reality is, okay, if you're going to do something, find something that, A, you're going to enjoy, make it a decent quality, you know, and, but also, don't go for second best, because if you're going to poison your body, have fun doing it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Is that what we're saying?
Well, I think that's what we're saying. And care, and, you know, care about what it is you're drinking. Because whereas, you know, with food now, we care a lot more about where things come from, who made them, what's in it. But sometimes with wine, we don't do that. We're just like, oh, that's really cheap. Mm. Where, you know, I want to know who made it, where it comes from, what's the story behind it. Because that's all part of the enjoyment of enjoying a glass
of
wine.
So if you were going to give three tips based on that then, you know, because your obviously level of knowledge is... far surpasses the average midlifer. Right?
Yeah. Well, it's the only thing I know about.
So what is it that we should be looking for? Because you're quite right. So many people were, you know, we send someone down to pick some wine up. They'd be like, well, there were three there. One was this price. They don't say where it was from. It's like you're guided by the price. What should we be looking for?
Well, I think the sweet spot really is between £8 and £12, you can find some really good wines. You don't have to pay a lot to find a good wine, but you do know where to look. You do have to know where to look, because quite often if you're paying for a wine with a big well-known name on it, you know, a region or a producer, you're paying a bit extra for that. So sometimes it's going to the slightly more under the radar places. So for example, instead of buying Châteauneuf-du-Pape, buy from Lirac, which is an appellation on the other side of the river. Same grapes, similar soil, similar style, but usually quite a lot less expensive. So it's little things like that, I always say. Knowing where to look. Yeah.
So I wouldn't even think about that.
No, we'd just go to Tesco's. I don't even know where that region is.
There is a lovely one in Tesco. And also, I always do think those supermarket ranges they have, like Finest or The Best or Taste the Difference, there's often really good wines in those ranges, because the buyers have spent almost kind of more time and effort getting those wines right because it's got their name on it.
And that's what I wanted to ask you, actually, in terms of, obviously you mentioned Châteauneuf-du-Pape, and, you know, there are these big, bold, global brands that can come to mind when we think of wines. Is there...
Think of one.
Châteauneuf-du-Pape. I can't think of a single
Come to mind. Clearly not right now, though.
None came to mind. Yeah. Didn't know what champagne brands were coming to mind, but
not wine.
So bougie.
Brands.
Oh,
I
know. Check her out.
While you're here, actually, is it Moët or Moët?
Moët, like you do the lawn.
Yes. Yeah.
Moët, like you do the lawn.
Moët.
Yeah.
That's so interesting, because I always said Moët, and then I heard someone saying Moët, and I was aghast.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it Veuve or Verve?
Verve.
Verve Clique.
Yeah, Verve Clicquot.
Verve Clicquot.
Oh, we are learning, kids.
We are. So, no, but my original question is, Is there a shame in going for a supermarket brand? You know, you're going to a party and you turn up with your Sainsbury's or your Tesco's or your Aldi and Lidl and all this kind of thing.
No, I mean, I as an ex-supermarket, but that's where I buy all my wine, pretty much, from the supermarket. I do have a really lovely independent wine shop near me in Lymington. And if I'm in the high street, I cannot walk past it without going in. So I will go and have.
Well, you've
got to
get your 100 a day in, haven't you?
Got to get my 100 a day in. Oh, and also they have some such lovely things as well. That's my equivalent of time in a sweet shop. That would be one way of filling my cup, is giving myself 20 minutes in their shop.
I think we'll join you. We'll all bring a cup.
Yeah, but no, God, no shame in buying in supermarkets at all. I mean, the opposite. I think, you know, the buyers now, they really know what they're doing. They get some brilliant value wines. And wine is one of life's little luxuries. And as I say, I mean, I've not made a career drinking the really smart stuff. My career in wine is about drinking supermarket wine, everyday wines that I want people to enjoy. So,
do you know what? This is something that, so years ago, I used to work in really high-end hospitality. So I went on many, many wine courses and things like that. And some of it, I'd sit there coming out at the end of it going, not really knowing much more than what I went in there. Because there was so much detail and everything like that. But there were a few things that stuck with me. And one of them was probably similar to what you're saying with the supermarkets, is when you go to a really nice restaurant or a really nice hotel, they have probably done more work on choosing their house wine than they have stocking all the other well-known brands and all that. And if you go in there and they hand you this 400-page document wine list and the sommelier is looking at you going, how can I help you? Yes. And you're feeling overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Actually, just by choosing the house wine, you're probably not going to go too far wrong.
So there is that hilarious myth that people always go for the second cheapest because they don't want to look like they're too cheap, so they just go one up or one down. And you know, I can imagine when you're handed the wine list and someone's standing there saying, have you chosen yet, and most people will just be looking at it thinking, I really hope I see a name I recognize, I just want to see something I recognize.
Where's Jacob's Creek, come on.
But I always say to people, first of all, if you're somewhere, I think the better places have shorter wine list, because I think that, you know, there's such a thing as too much choice.
100%.
Just if it's a shorter wine list, and then you feel like everything is well chosen. Secondly, if there is a sommelier or somebody there who seems to know what they're talking about, ask them, because chances are they will have tried everything. Mm. And then you can say to them, right, this is the style I like. So I like a pick pool. What on here is similar to that you think I'll like? I mean, don't be scared and say, you know, just panic. Do ask, because it's a bit like hairdresser paralysis. You know, sometimes when you get to the hairdressers and they say, what would you like? And you say, oh, I don't mind, do anything. And then you're sitting there thinking, oh, no, don't, not
too
that,
much,
not
too
that.
Much.
Not that, not that.
Not that, not that. So, you know what you like. We all know what we're old enough now to know what we like and what we don't like. So don't feel intimidated about saying that. And also saying how much you want to spend. Mm. So, you know, I don't want to spend over this much. I always do that.
Yeah, I mean, I will say I have been into a couple of places before and I said, I don't know, I just fancy a nice glass of red, you choose, and I come back.
Yeah, wow, they saw you coming.
Freaking hell. I could have bought a bottle for that.
You know, I never do that.
I'm like that, scooping out the glass. It's like, look at.
Yeah, no, don't do that.
Goodness me.
So obviously this is what you do for a living. If someone is listening to this and thinking, do you know, I enjoy wine and I want to know a little bit more about it, how do they go about it? How do you educate yourself?
Well, obviously, I would say that the best way to do it is just to keep tasting, going back to the thing about tasting lots of different wines. It really is. I mean, the best research is by always trying something different. Try and make every bottle you taste different to the last one, so that you're, you know, right, because we tend to end up finding our thing and sticking to it when we're buying. So, but we wouldn't eat the same food all the time, but that's definitely what we do with wine. I wrote a book years ago called The Knack of Mother's Wine Guide, which is still going, and it's really funny because when I wrote it, I wrote this wine book essentially for my friends and family. It was based on 10 years of being a wine buyer, but also all the questions I'd ever been asked by my friends on a very regular basis. So I was like, I'm going to put it in a book, but it was a blog originally, and that became a book. And I always say, it's if you get your head around these basics, you don't need to know everything. Just get these basics in your head, and then you can start building your own. It's like having an inbuilt wine sat nav. That means you can then navigate.
So I want to know what the most common questions are.
Shall we have one more?
Yeah.
That's very true. Well, there were lots of common questions that I... So at the end of each chapter, there is a myth that I address. Because, you know, wine is full of myths. It's a bit smoke and mirrors sometimes. And then actually, I did do an online wine course last year with Create Academy. So that's essentially putting the book into visual form. And it's all about like just doing it in chunks. And as you say, it's such a massive subject. And I've spent, you know, my working life devoted to learning about it. But I've realized that that's the thing. Everybody can taste wine. Everybody can taste wine as well as I can. Because you know what you like and don't like. Nobody can tell you if a wine is any good apart from you. But then if you can layer that up with the knowledge of where to look and where to go and what questions to ask, then you can get a lot more out of it. And that's what I'm really trying to help people do, I think.
I think what I like doing is like if we go to a nice place on holiday or something like that, and we get local wine from that region.
Yeah.
And then it's something that we will take pictures of the wine and all that, and then try and explore that region when we go to other countries. Yeah, does that make sense?
It's gorgeous. Like,
because and there is so much wine production. There are so many places that you do. Knowing all that, if it's not your day job, is so overwhelming. Yeah. So just remember a time where you actually drunk something nice and sort of build out on that.
But and I do think for me also wine, what I love about it almost more than anything is the fact that it is something that you generally do sitting down at the table, probably with someone you love, like a friend, family, whoever it is, and you're taking time to sit down. So wine is there, but it's not, for me, it's not the be all and end all. It's about the what you're doing with it and the time you're having with it. So having that glass on holiday. The next time you ever find or come across that wine you loved on holiday, when you try it again, you'll both have those lovely memories. Do you know what I mean? So for me, wine is, it's so much more than just what's in the glass. But I it really makes me want everyone to get the most out of it rather than be scared by it, because it isn't something you should be scared.
Definitely not. And let's be honest, what would midlifers do without wine?
Oh, crikey. Can't even think about it.
Let's not scare anyone. There's plenty of wine. It's fine. We haven't heard anything.
No, but everything you said there, Helen, is so beautiful, because it really sums up that it is about filling your cup.
It is literally about
filling your cup, about the ceremony around it, the company around it.
Yeah.
And just to finish off there, when you were saying about, you know, what would we do without it? Obviously, if there are people listening who don't drink, what can they do in terms of alcohol-free versions of wine or that kind of thing? Is there such a thing that it's as good as the normal wine, in your opinion?
I wish I could say there was. I really wish. But in all the years, I'm still yet to find the alcohol-free wine that I drink and think, oh my goodness, that's so delicious. I could be having a glass of wine, because essentially alcohol carries flavour as well. And the minute you take alcohol out of a drink, you also do take flavour and backbone. And very often that hole is filled with sugar instead. And there are some alcohol-free wines that are coming out now that are not as sweet as they used to be, but to be honest, most of them to me still taste a little bit like grape juice. And if I'm not going to have a glass of wine, I'd rather have a tonic or a flavoured tonic, or, you know, do a really nice, simple, non-alcoholic drink. I drink Mother Root is my go-to on my booze-free days, which I do have, believe it or not, which is just a ginger switchel and a drop of that with some tonic, because it's flavour and it's refreshing and it's gorgeous. And actually, it's only really on my non-drinking days, it's only that first one that as soon as you've had something else rather than that first glass of wine, it's gone. I then don't worry, I don't then feel like I'm missing out, as long as you have that one really nice drink that you make and make it look nice, put a nice little garnish, you know, twist of lemon in there or whatever it is. But alcohol-free wine, it's yet to do it for me.
You know, I've got a funny story about alcohol-free wine. We got sent some, didn't we? And because I'm all about, you know, like looking after yourself, self-care and that, there's part of a golf group that I'm part of. And now and then they say, does anyone want to sponsor a hole or something like that? And I thought, I'll sponsor a hole. But, you know, I can't really be giving away bottles of wine and encouraging people to drink when I'm encouraging them to look after themselves. And I'm not saying you can't do the both, but most of these guys definitely get the balance wrong. So I gave this bottle of alcohol-free wine. Well, needless to say, that alcohol bottle of free wine has made an appearance several times with people donating
it. Just going round and round.
No one wants it.
That's just keeps doing the rounds. Oh, that is funny.
Yeah, is so funny. Stick to wine.
Yeah. Do you know what I have? I have kombucha.
Kombucha, brilliant.
In a wine glass.
I put it in a wine glass with some ice. Yeah. And I get the ceremony. And it is like a ceremony at the end of the day where you're raising a toast to yourself that you've made it through.
Yeah.
And I think you're absolutely right in terms of there's a depth to wine that we don't even appreciate that that's part of the enjoyment and not just the alcohol. Yes, it's got that coldness, that bite and that fizz, but it also does something at the back of your throat, I think, the kombucha. So for me, that's...
It has all the flavour in there. There's a gorgeous producer called the LA Brewery. And I think that if you Google them, you can order online. I think they're in Ocado and some other places. But that's it's an alcohol-free brewery in Suffolk. And she, the girl who makes it, Louise Avery, she uses foraged ingredients because she was brought up on mull by her mum, who was a great forager. So everything she uses is in season, and a lot of the stuff that she does as well, you know, it changes throughout the year, but her drinks are so delicious. They are so delicious. Mm. Back to the point, you don't miss out. You don't feel like you're missing out because you're having something delicious. It's just not trying to pretend to be wine. I think that's where I have the problem. It's where drinks are trying to pretend to be wine and they're so clearly not. So just don't pretend.
But it's like all of us. Don't pretend to be anything else other than what you are and be brilliant at that thing.
Exactly that.
But I don't get that with like even vegan foods and like, oh, vegan bacon. It's like, no, people don't want to eat the bacon. So be something else.
Yeah.
You know, and they manufacture these things to look like something that they're trying not to be. I just don't get that.
Yeah, just be your own.
Be your own version.
Yeah. Because, I mean, alcohol-free beer is amazing because there's lots more flavour to play with, and a lot of them they don't have the alcohol removed. They're made so that they don't have the alcohol in the first place. So it's a different process. So it means that it's left tasting pretty much like beer.
It's still beer.
Do you remember when we were on holiday once in France, and I was just like, not that I buy beer often anyway, so I've gone to this French supermarket and I'm like really not quite sure what I'm looking at, these variety of beers. So I buy them anyway because it's hot and it's nice to have a cold beer at the end of the day and that. And about 2-3 days in, I realise I'm drinking alcohol-free beer.
Right. You were feeling fantastic. Right.
I was like, awesome. and then Finley, Andrea's son, my stepson, was there. And he's like, oh, well, can we get some proper beer? He says, okay, we get some proper beer. And what was funny, we spent the whole holiday, he drunk the proper beer and I just drank
the alcohol-free.
I did not like the proper beer.
It's so funny, isn't it? And you feel great.
Yeah, it was amazing.
You still quite often will go for the alcohol-free beer.
Do you know what? I'm so funny. It's like, I have this thing about saying I don't drink. I don't drink often.
Yeah.
I used to, oh my God.
Yes.
Terrible amounts. Great fun. But now.
But that was then.
Now I couldn't do it now, nor would I want to do it now. But I primarily drink, if I go to a pub, I might have like a ginger beer or something like that. Yeah. Just something like you say, with a bit of flavour or something. Yeah. I do enjoy a nice glass of wine.
Yeah.
But like we went out recently to a lovely restaurant. I ordered a glass of wine. I probably had a quarter of it.
Yeah.
I just wanted that wine taste with what I'd ordered.
Yes, and with that your was food it. And then you did
absolutely.
Enough.
You know, it's like the gravy, isn't it? It's just another added layer of the food and that. Yeah. But it's funny, isn't it? Alcohol and how people are with it. And
I think a lot of people are readdressing their relationship with it and trying to work out, you know, what's good and what's not. And it is about balance. But I think that's where I've always tried to reiterate that with wine, for me, it is you know, it is about the journey, not the destination. Like those days are gone when you didn't mind, you know, you didn't care what you were drinking as long as it was cheap or somebody else was buying. You know, now it is about caring what's in your glass because you want to make it.
Okay, count. Very quickly then.
Right.
Name a wine from the past, like when you were growing up.
Lambrusco Bianco.
Yeah. Oh, really? So mine would be in my 20s when we used to go to All Bar One back in the day and used to order the glass of Chardonnay and the glasses were massive. It was like a goldfish bowl. And it was that buttery Australian Chardonnay that was so trendy, you know, back in the, like, this is early 90s, just arrived in London, thought we were very swanky going to All Bar One, drinking our massive glasses of Chardonnay. And now, even now, if I smell it, it takes me back. It takes me back to, you know, to standing in that bar on the Northcote Road.
See Lambrusco Bianco in a supermarket.
Yeah.
It takes me back to going to parties and thinking I'm being very, very swanky by arriving with a bottle of wine.
There was that one. Is it Frascati?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when my dad, when he was being super posh, Blue Nun.
Oh.
Black Tower. Yeah.
They're still around.
I know.
Still around.
Now, I want to pick up on something that you said, which was it's all about balance.
Yes.
It's all about balance. Because I think this is a brilliant way to end today's conversation. You'll have heard of Dr. Michael Mosley.
Yeah.
And he has come up with this test, which is all to do with balance.
Yeah.
Which he recommends that anyone in midlife should give this a little go. And what this will do is it'll ascertain our longevity. In terms of if however long you are able to do this test, which I'll go into in a second, is a sort of predictor for how long you're going to live. And the reason for that is, other than having traffic accidents, falls are a worldwide most common cause of death. And normally it's because you've lost your balance. Now you lose your balance from drinking wine and from all sorts of things. That was my little tenuous link there.
And you didn't even know you loaded that, did you?
No.
Don't worry, you won't regret it. We're not going to get you to do anything.
So this is really interesting. So we could do it here. Do you want to be our guinea picnic or should we try and do it here?
Can we just talk about what it is first?
Okay, what are you going
to
make us do?
I am not committing to anything yet.
So a good test of balance is to see how long you can stand on one leg. First of all, with your eyes open and then with your eyes closed. So what you need to do is anyone listening, you can try this at home. Take your shoes off, put your hands on your hips, stand on one leg. See how long you last. Now the test is over. As soon as you shift your planted foot, as in wobble about, or you put your other leg back down, you do best of three. Best of three, time yourself. And then you do it again, but with your eyes shut.
Yeah.
It'll be terrible. You will fall over so quickly. And it has a list of whatever age you are, of how long you are expected to last. So under the age of 40, you're expected to last 45 seconds with your eyes open, 15 seconds with your eyes closed.
Really?
Age 40 to 49, you're supposed to last 42 seconds with your eyes open, 13 seconds with your eyes closed. Now we're getting to proper midlife here, and this is all of us in this room. Age 50 to 59, 41 seconds with your eyes open, 8 seconds with your eyes closed. It massively drops. Age 60 to 69, 32 seconds open, and 4 seconds with your eyes shut.
And if you can do that, that's good for that age. Right, okay.
It is.
Yeah. I will say I'm not going to get up and do it here.
Oh, go on.
Well, only because...
I'll do it, I don't mind.
I know probably about a year or so again, we went to a talk and one of the guys was a movement guy talking and he actually got everyone to do that particular exercise and he talked about it. And it is insanely difficult and different when you shut your eyes.
Yeah.
It's almost like someone's pushing you.
Yeah.
Your sense of awareness and balance goes. And the amount of people that stood there going, yeah, I can do this, stand on one leg, flamingo, I do it. You know, there are a few yogis there as well.
Yeah.
Hey, don't say yogi in that tone. It's great being
a yogi. Hey, it's good being flexible, right? And then he went, now shut your eyes. Oh my God, it was like dominoes. Like people like falling and things like that. It's amazing.
Well, I had a total knee replacement in May. Because an old accident came back to haunt me. And I feel like that about
some of my ex-husbands.
Well, do you know what? When I went to have the scan done, because my knee effectively just gave way in January, and I went to go back to see the doctor and the surgeon, and we scanned it, and he looked at it, and his words were, he said, Helen, we've run out of road. Like, you just need a new one. Oh. Yeah, so I had to have a new one. But the good thing about it has been that I hadn't been in a gym for years. Like, I swim a lot and I walk the dogs a lot, but I haven't been in a gym for years. And this knee, I had the operation in May, and I've had to do physio exercises every day for, you know, when I can, pretty much since then. And it's got me back in the gym. It's got me doing lots of balancing work. And in a way, it is a blessing in disguise, because it's made me realize that, you know, as much as the swimming and everything else is good, it is about just looking after your bone, you know, your bones, your muscles, your just
the basics,
the strength, the basics, exactly. Mm, 100%. Rather than flinging your thinking you've got to go for a long run. Yeah. No. Just go into the gym and go and stand on one leg, like, for as long as you can, hopefully more than 8 seconds.
Do you know what? Brush your teeth over night time and try this exercise, because the thing is, it is something that is incredibly important, not because he says it, right? But it actually is.
Yeah.
There's a statistic that I can't remember in the age group, but certainly as you go over 50, the people that fall and break their hips within 18 months, it's something like 60-70% of them don't last 18 months.
Really?
That's shocking.
That's how important really balance is.
That's shocking.
Yeah, that's really shocking.
Can I tell you why it matters? Because you will learn this about me. I love a survey. I love a study.
You love a research.
I do love research. So in terms of why does it matter? So this was a study in the British Medical Journal, tested 2,760 men and women who at the time of testing were 53 years old. So you're
51.
You're 51, you're 51, I'm 54. So we're right in that kind of bracket, average wise. They measured their grip strength, how quickly they could stand upright from sitting, and how long they could stand on one leg with their eyes closed. When the researchers returned 13 years later, they found that the tests had all independently predicted the chance that someone would die over that period, but the one-legged standing test was the best. Those individuals who lasted less than 2 seconds were three times more likely to have died than those who held it for 10 seconds or more. Now, that sounds like a really grim way to end the podcast, but it doesn't. It just shows that these are all things that you can work on.
Yeah.
And it's not about going to the gym. It's not about, you know, doing huge, great big things. This is something that we really try and live by.
Yeah.
Is that what are the micro habits that you can introduce to your daily life, whether it is the filling your cup and doing four things.
Yeah.
Or literally, as Nick said, when you're brushing your teeth, which hopefully we do twice a day, just stand on one leg
stand
for
on
a
one
while
leg and, do
and
it.
Builds that strength up.
Yeah. And if you do the balance and not fall over, you can reward yourself with a small glass of really nice wine.
I love that.
Not after brushing your teeth. That's not mouthwash.
It will taste terrible. Helen, thank you so much for coming and joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
It's been so lovely.
I think we all need to go and get a glass of wine now.
I think we do. And thank you too for joining us as well. And we hope that you've enjoyed this latest edition as we continue to crash through and master midlife.